if I had a boat, I'd go out on the ocean. And if I had a pony, I'd ride him on my boat. And we could all together go out on the ocean, send me up on my pony, on my boat. Now if I were Roy Rogers, I'd sure enough be single. I couldn't bring myself to marry an old dame. Would it just be me and Trevor? We'd go riding through them movies, then we'd buy a boat and on the sea we'd sail. If I had a boat, I'd go out on the ocean. And if I had a pony, I'd ride him on my boat. And we could all together go out on the ocean, send me up on my pony, on my
boat. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Thursday, April 5th, 2018 edition of the American Awakening. I am your host, Michael Herzog, and I will be with you for the next 2 hours. Folks, I have to tell you, we're in for a real treat today. I have, well, for many of you, you may remember, I did a program last year, a report, if you will, on Libya and Muammar Gaddafi prior to the NATO invasion. And I kind of gave an overview of what life was like over there. And I'm so excited today to have a couple that actually lived it, was actually there, and I'm going to bring them up in just a minute, and I'm going to kind of compare notes with them on the report that I did last year, just to verify of what I told you was true. But in the meantime, let me welcome James and Joanne Moriarty. Welcome to the American Awakening, my friends. How are you?
We're fine. Great. Thank you for having
Proud
us.
Proud to be with you.
Thank you. You know, guys, I've heard about you. I've had listeners that have asked me to bring you up on the air. And this is the first opportunity that we've had to connect. And as I mentioned, last year I did a report on Libya, Muammar Gaddafi, and, you know, who Muammar Gaddafi really was and what he was trying to do, as opposed to the propaganda that we were constantly being spoon-fed through mainstream media about what a tyrant he was. But what I'd like to do, guys, is I'd like for you to kind of give an overview to my listening audience of who you are and what you were doing there at the time, and let's go into this. So one of you take the floor and let us know what was happening in Libya prior to the invasion.
Okay, let me tell you how we got there first. We have international production and marketing rights on some real neat proprietary technology that rejuvenates oil wells and cleans up pipelines and sludge pits and chicken fat and stuff like that. And we had successfully rejuvenated about 7,000 oil wells worldwide, had less than 100 failures. We really have no peers in that technology. But most of our business was done in China. We had actually built two production plants there, and we just couldn't get the Chinese to pay what they had contracted to pay. And they kind of had us hog leg because we had two big production plants there, and we finally just had enough, and we were looking for additional markets that we could explore where we get paid. And Libya had been locked out of all new technology for over 38 years from the sanctions. And their oil production prior to the sanctions had been about 3.8 million barrels of oil a day. It was down to about 900,000 barrels a day. So they were a perfect candidate for our technology. And we kept trying to get in there prior to the treaty that was signed, and we never had really much traction there. The treaty was signed in 2006 between Condoleezza Rice and Gaddafi, and Gaddafi was required to step down from power and reduce the military by half, et cetera, et cetera. And through some friendship Joanne had with one of the royal family members in England, we were able to get into Libya. Our first trip there was January 1st, 2007. And we went in there with a whole lot of trepidation. I'd bought a whole bushel basket of headscarves for Joanne to cover up with, and I had a security team, four great big guys, you know, when they walk in the door, it blocks out the sunlight to protect us while we were there. And 2 days in Tripoli, I sent the security team home. We didn't need it. People there loved Americans. When you'd see anybody, they would say Mia Mia, which is like 100% or very good, you know, and they'd raise their thumb up, and Hollywood Americans, oh, we're so happy to see you, you know. not all what we'd expected. And in this, in Tripoli, that was a city of 2 million people. They had two policemen, and those guys didn't even have guns. They, you know, they would, they were mainly directing traffic. Not many traffic signals around. You know, you're in more danger from getting run over from a driver than you are anything else there. We were safer walking the streets in Tripoli than we were in Houston Dallas. No, there were no radicals in Libya. In fact, if you had a beard and a mustache, you were going to be ostracized. You weren't going to be moved up in any business very rapidly. Gaddafi didn't like radicals. And where he got crosswise with them is some years earlier, he put 1,200 radicals in jail because they were murderers, rapists, psychopaths. And those guys just disappeared. And another thing Gaddafi did that was unusual is he threw out the part of the Quran that had been added by the crazy Ayatollah Khomeini when he was in exile in France. And he did not allow that part of the Quran to even be read or used in Libya. Libya protected all religions that were based on a book. And one of the first people we met there on our first trip in there was a Bishop Martinelli, who was a prelate for the Catholic Church. He'd been in Libya 35 years. He said, "I'm completely protected. The church is open. The rectory is open." He said, "We have no problem at all. The police protect us." There were a whole lot of Philippine doctors and nurses and everything there. He had a pretty good congregation there in Tripoli. But we traveled all over Libya. We were there 17 times before 2011. We were there never less than 30 days, most of the time 90 days at a time. And actually, on our first trip in there, we signed a contract to rejuvenate 2,500 of their monster wells. That was about $600 million, at least, of our product. Now, that's kind of a home run that you never dream about, you know.
Wow.
And over the next few years, we signed contracts to clean the sludge pits in the desert. The oil companies never cleaned up anything there. They just kept dumping their sludge out. We actually had booked about $5 billion worth of business before 2011. We don't do, in any country we do business, we don't do the political work inside the country. We provide our agents, if you would, with the magic of the product, and they do all the inside work. And it took us until 2011, January of 2011, we signed joint venture agreements with one of the Social Security pension funds in Libya that actually benefited all the retired people from the oil and gas industry. That gave us all the intro into all the oil and gas industry, all the rejuvenation, et cetera. And the thing that we found about Libya was that Gaddafi was anything but the ogre that he had been described as. For example, when you got married, the government gave you a gift of $46,000.
Okay, let me stop you there, Jim.
Okay,
hold on. Do you want to be called Jim or James? Does it matter?
Jimmy's fine.
Jimmy's fine. Okay. Now, you just touched on something that what I'd like to do is toss this out at both of you guys and tell me how close to right I was. Because, as I said, I did a report on Libya last year on my program. And, you know, I want to just share with you a couple of things because you had just mentioned, you know, $44,000. Now, tell me if I'm wrong here. In Libya, homes were considered by Gaddafi a human right. Is that correct?
Yes, it was. In fact, the government, in 2011, he was building 6,200 new condominiums. 62,000, pardon me.
No, 620,000.
Pardon me.
Okay.
620,000. And they were about 2,000 to 2,600 square feet each. You paid 10% of your salary for 20 years, and that was yours. No tax or anything.
Well, and is it true newly married couples received $50,000 to buy their new house? Is that correct?
Actually, about $46,000 plus they got their first car at half price. You know, every child, the government gifted you $5,000 for every child when it was born. Education was paid to whatever extent your brain would support, and if you studied outside of Libya, it paid all your education expense plus. It paid your living expenses, and I've said many times, we knew a young man getting his doctorate in England. He had a wife and four kids. His monthly stipend was £4,500 a month, that was about $7,500 a month while he was in university. And hospitalization, same thing. If you couldn't get the treatment you needed in Libya, the government paid for you and a family member to travel wherever in the world you needed to get your treatment. And, of course, it paid for all your expenses and treatments and everything. Gasoline was 44 cents a gallon for a 96 octane fuel.
Electricity, Jim.
Free.
It was that, right? And that's what I have in here. And Gaddafi vowed to house every Libyan before his own parents, did he not?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was not just housing. It was a quality of life also. If your business was so bad that you'd lost your money, they had storehouses all over the country. You could go up to the storehouse. They didn't ask you for a name or ID, anything. They would give you 50 kilos of rice and 50 kilos of flour and cheese and butter and milk. And they would give you enough money to go have an animal slaughtered for your family. And you could go back to that storehouse again the next day and they do it again.
Well, everything that you have just told me with some minor differences is exactly what I reported on my program last year. And not only that, now I know that you guys would probably agree, Libya at that time was the only first world country in the whole continent of Africa. Am I correct there?
That's correct.
Okay. And not only that, Jim, you may know in the business that you were in, Libya was taking it beyond that. Muammar Gaddafi actually was going to the leaders of all the heads of state around these countries, nations of Africa. And I'm not talking about, you know, to trade his oil and gold dinars per se. That's part of it. But also, he was going around trying to make deals to actually bring the entire continent of Africa into a first world country by putting irrigation in to make farmland out of desert and so forth. Am I correct there?
That's correct. In fact, he was the first president of the African Union. And you mentioned first world. Libya was performing first world activities in all the poorest countries in Africa. He was supplying them with cement plants, water wells, technical support, infrastructure. These activities, agriculture was a big deal with him. He was doing these activities, and Libya was using about 49% of its income to support the country. The other 51% was partitioned out in these activities for the people and other areas of Africa. And, you know, just before in 2010, European Union got together and got a grant for the impoverished African countries of about 60 million euros. And they made Gaddafi the trustee for that money. And he was interviewed in French on French TV. And the reporter said, "Why, here's $60 million for all of Africa. That's not much." And he said, this is a good start to have the people learn how to produce for themselves, because they need to be producers. They don't need to be depending on your money to survive." So, you know, he was really a guy that believed in developing the country. Libya went from the poorest country in Africa before the bloodless coup to the most developed country in Africa. Their salaries were $15,800 a year. At the time, that was higher than China, higher than India. Had a very, very high rating for the child infant care. They were rated number one in the world. There was about four other countries rated number one for prenatal and postnatal care by the World Health Organization. Survival of babies was extremely high. You know, they had hospitals and clinics. They had the most advanced technical equipment that hospitals, in fact, hospitals here in the United States to this day still have not matched a lot of stuff that they had in Libya. And, the Great Man-Made River was his project, and he was going to make a garden, if you would, out of part of the Sahara. And the Sahara, below the Sahara, is the largest freshwater aquifer in the world. So the Great Man-Made River was really going to be a reality. The other thing that people, you know, don't understand is how emancipated women were. And Joanne will tell you about that.
Yeah, in the 1970s, Gaddafi emancipated women. He didn't even like headscarves, really. He didn't want women to cover up at all. And he gave them, they were free to do what they wanted in Libya. They were in the military. Most of his guards were females. They were doctors. They were lawyers. We had many friends that were doctors and lawyers that were women. They were entrepreneurs. They were wives. They were, women had more rights in a divorce court there than we have here in the United States.
They drove their own cars. They went wherever they wanted. You know, they didn't have anybody following them around.
Well, it's fascinating that you say that. So what you're saying, Joanne, is that you didn't have to wear a hijab when you were over there. No. Now, go ahead.
I asked some of the women that – we have some good friends that are women over there. I said, why do you guys wear these headscarves? You don't even have to. And they said, well, we don't have to wash our hair then, and we do it. It's kind of a – they match their outfits to the color of the scarf. It was a fashion statement. I said – and I asked them that. I said, is that really a fashion statement? And they said, yeah, it really is.
It outlines their face,
yeah,
and they liked it.
And they didn't have to do their hair. They said that was a big deal for them. They didn't have to do anything with their hair.
Well, let me ask you this question, all right? Because I looked at a clip. Now, if we watch a parade going through Washington, D.C., or going from point A to point B, and the president or any high-level official here goes from point A to – there's an entourage of military – police, you know, by the dozens. There's bulletproof cars. There's all this stuff. Now, I saw a clip of Muammar Gaddafi going from, I can't remember, it's point A to point B, and he was in a Toyota, and he had his head popped up through the sunroof, and there was people on the side of the road all the way through his procession that were just cheering this guy. You know, coming out of the woodwork from the tops of buildings and so forth. He had no escort. He had no military. He had no police. No nothing. Just waving at the people. Okay.
You also saw him on the ground in Tripoli like that.
He was loved by the Libyans. You know, we never met Gaddafi, and we really didn't do business with any of his people. But we were to find out later. We did business with a lot of the leaders of the tribes. But we learned who he was through the hearts of and minds of his people. You know, we listened to him. We heard him speak about him, what they thought of him, what he did for them. Because when the bloodless coup took place in 1969, when the old despot king ran off because he was such an old despot.
He was a pedophile. He was garbage.
Yeah. And he had kept the Libyans at 60 dinar a year. You know, they were basically slaves to the Italians that were there with their big plantations. And the 11 tribes that took their country back, they appointed Gaddafi because he was the youngest, the most educated, the most charismatic guy. When that happened, where was I going with that?
More than one time on the news, they had videos of Gaddafi walking on the streets with people around him. He's walking. There's not a guard anywhere in sight.
I know what I was going to say there. What I kind of got sidetracked. What happened when the old despot king ran off and Gaddafi took over? He gave all the land that the Libyans basically were working as slaves, he gave it to the Libyan people. First time in the history of Libya, the Libyan people got to own their own land because they've been occupied for 8,000 years.
Yeah, you know, it's fat. We got a break coming up here in a couple minutes. I'm sure you guys are familiar with RBN. We do have commercial breaks. But, sure. Yeah, in 1951, Libya was the poorest country in the world. And 1951 up to 1969, what you're talking about, the people were oppressed. And when Muammar Gaddafi took over, he started from scratch. As you said, he gave that land back to the people that were slaves on the land. I mean, the things that he did over there are, you know, we could only wish that this country did the same thing.
I'd like to see any leader take a country from 1969 to 2011 and turn it into and develop it to that rate where the people are not poor anymore, where they have a developed educational system, where they have a developed medical system, where the people have housing, where the roads are beautiful.
No debt.
Yeah, no debt in the country.
Mm-hmm. And you know, touching on that, which we'll get into a little bit deeper, you know, Muammar Gaddafi wanted to expand that. He was going around the country talking to the heads of state of different nations in Africa, talking to them about trading selling his oil in gold dinars, a backed currency. And he was also going to use that. All right, got a break coming up. Let me hold that thought. I'll be back. Well, we'll be back in three. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening, with my special guests, Jim and Joanne Moriarty. Stick around, folks. More to come.
Do you or a loved one suffer migraine headaches? Listen to what scientist Kurt Hendricks has to say.
35 million people in the United States suffer with debilitating migraines. If you or a loved one are one of them, you need to know about MigRelief. Hi, I'm Kurt Hendricks, the scientist that formulated and patented the MigRelief migraine formula. MigRelief is a non-prescription dietary supplement recommended by neurologists, pharmacists, and pediatricians to address nutritional deficiencies in both adults and children over 2 with migraines. Try MigRelief for 3 months and see the powerful difference it can make in your life, or get your money back, no questions asked. Go to MIG911.com or call 800-MIG-7354. You can change your life today.
So if you suffer from migraines, don't wait. Call 800-MIG-7354. That's 800-MIG-7354 or visit MIG911.com.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you a few from Amazon.com. By Mel. Great product. My husband and father-in-law use it regularly. Both my husband and father-in-law have had significant change in their blood pressure and overall health. By Amazon customer. It works for me. Returned to buy the tincture and the capsules as they were on sale during February. Unlike some other products, this one worked for blood pressure and occasional irregular heartbeat. Extendivite produced noticeable results after just 2 bottles, a 4-month supply. I take Extendivite 3 times a day, every day. I think this supplement has helped with my increased fitness regime and to lower my blood pressure. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
Folks, we're back with the American Awakening. Michael Herzog, your host, coming to you live from the Valley of the Sun with my special guests, Jim and Joanne Moriarty. And before I get back to this, I want to give a shout out to John and Austin for bringing these people together in communication with me. Thank you, John. I appreciate that. I'll tell you, you know, I want to step out on a limb a little bit here, because under the Bretton Woods Agreement and the oil, 1973 OPEC oil agreement, all of these countries were to trade their oil for dollars instead. You know, they would have to exchange their currency for dollars and keep those in reserve to buy and sell oil. And I'm thinking it was likely, and correct me if I'm wrong, you may or may not know, folks, but Muammar Gaddafi got sick of that. And he was going around to the heads of state of all these African nations to make agreements and deals with them to trade with the African gold dinar. Would I be on point there?
100%. In fact, Libya had no relationship at all with the Rothschild, Rockefeller, Medici, Bush banking cartel at all. There were no international banks in Libya. In fact, our first trip in there, we planned to be 2 or 3 days, and since we already got to the point of pending a contract, and then a bunch of Libyan ministers wanted to meet with us to really find out how business was done outside in the West, And we had to stay longer, and they didn't use credit cards or anything. We had to go get some more cash brought into Libya. Their international bank was Western Union. Absolutely.
We fell in love with Libya at that time.
And we said, if we can keep them out of the hands of the bad guys, great. You know.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, can you imagine, folks? I mean, you know, in the litany of things, the stuff that I have listed here, what this man did for his people, the style of living in the country, as opposed, you know, we could only wish that it would happen over here, or it would be the same over here. Two completely diametrically opposed societies, one in which people could live in fear, without fear, in peace, not be oppressed. I mean, you know, the loans were 100% interest-free by law. You know, if a Libyan bought a car, the government paid half the cost. I mean, 44 cents a gallon for gasoline. And even, and let me ask you this, folks. If a Libyan wished to become a farmer, did he not get free use of a land, a home, the equipment, the livestock, and the seeds to farm?
And the education to do it. They would send him wherever he wanted to go, what kind of farming he wanted to do. You know, they were taught to do that. And I'll tell you, the biggest agricultural community in Libya was black. 30% of all the number one black passport Libyans were black. They'd been there for over 150 years. The biggest slave trading city in the world was Gdansk. That was in far western Libya. Really unique city. The entire city of about 40,000 is under one roof.
Some thousands of year old city.
And it's got a great big, they call it the Eye of the Horse. A water,
a spring
that's there. And that was the slave trading center. So lots and lots of blacks had been in Libya.
Coming up from Africa.
You know, forever. But Gaddafi, he had about 2 million foreign workers in Libya. And any African could have free ingress into Libya, no restrictions at all. But they had to be able to work and be willing to work. And he really buffered. He kept this flow of impoverished people out of Europe. That was one of the functions that he was doing, because he saw the detriment that would be caused to Europe by this flood of people out of Africa. So he was back, like everybody, every politician should do, help those poor people in their own country, cure the problem in their country so they don't become your problem. And he did that. He, like I said, he did irrigation, he did cement plants, he did all kinds of infrastructure projects all over Africa, and he was helping Africa bring itself up. You mentioned the African Bank. That was really the thing that caused his untimely demise. Well, because it was a gold-backed dinar, it was already established, the home office was in the Comore Islands, all the Arab countries had signed up as members, and half the African countries had signed up as members, and a gold-backed currency with the resources of Africa behind it would have completely finished the toilet paper bankers.
Well, you know,
and they couldn't have that.
Saddam Hussein tried to do that, Assad is trying to do that, they want to get away from the petrodollar, they don't want it anymore. This is causing their demise. You know, they can't go against these the debt. We have to be debt slaves, you know.
Right. And I'm glad you touched on that. We're going to take another break here in a minute, and then we'll have a long segment coming up, guys. But yes, Gaddafi was a threat to the entire debt-based World Bank fiat currency system, because he was going to start selling his oil in the African dinar. But also, when he was going to, you know, put irrigation through and turn the lands in from desert into, you know, growth with you know, corn and beans or whatever they were going to grow over there. Agriculture, yeah. They were going – he would have been a major threat to the entire world debt slave system. And this is why they took him out. Yeah. And so you know, that being said, and I wanted to get into this during the program today, the lead up, were you guys actually on the ground in the NATO invasion?
Yes.
We were there. I was there. I left February 8th, and we were back in there.
Okay, we got to take a break. We'll be back in a few minutes. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening, with my special guests, Jim and Joanne Moriarty. Stick around, folks. Don't go away. More to come.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT-TODAY.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds, up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space. And when you're out there without care, yeah, I was out of.
All right, folks, we're back with the American Awakening. Michael Herzog, your host, with my special guests, Jim and Joanne Moriarty, who were on the ground, boots on the ground in Libya during the time of the NATO invasion. Now, guys, I wanted to ask you, you had mentioned earlier about the sanctions that had been imposed on Libya from the Western world. Now, what was that all about? Why were we sanctioning the heck out of these people for so long?
Well, because Libya is a huge amount of in situ assets. They've got the lightest oil in the world. That Bonnie Light, you can take it out of the ground, almost pour it in your crankcase. And when the U.S. and England and France took over Libya after the war, after World War II, they installed this pedophile despot king. Libya never had a king. They had a huge number of tribes, but each one has kind of like the king, but they put this guy in there,
tribal leaders.
And they just exploited the hell out of the country. And they were pulling all the oil and gas. Libya's got a whole lot of gas as well as oil. Equal amount of gas comes out of the ground as the oil does. So huge natural resource. And they were exploiting the devil out of it. And of the three countries that were burning up Libya, the one that was really helping the people was the U.S. And the U.S. companies were in there training the Libyan people how to be workers in the field. And they put schools in place for their kids, and they were teaching hygiene. And the Libyans love Americans for that reason, because we were the first country that went in there and really tried to help the people. Everybody else tried to burn them down, you know. So that continued, and
when they had the bloodless coup,
it was just because it was so bad.
Gaddafi actually reached out to the West for help on certain items. He didn't know how to run the country, and he was told in no uncertain terms to put the old despot king back in and step down. So he in turn turned to other people that the West didn't like. But what happened was, because of this, when anything bad happened, Libya was a closed country. They didn't defend themselves to the world. Their attitude was, our God and the truth will save us. And they didn't go out to the media. They didn't do anything. Well, when the CIA blew up Lockerbie, because, and that's all been outed, completely outed.
Libya
had nothing to do with the Lockerbie bombing. They were the scapegoats. And because of that, and the whole story about the CIA and the drugs in Afghanistan and everything is on the internet. You can find it about what they did. But they blamed Gaddafi because he was an easy target. It gave him a couple of wins. It gave him everybody hated Libya, a chance to take Libya back, a chance to kill Muammar Gaddafi, a chance to shut down Libyan oil trading and stuff.
But, the bad guys never stopped trying to gain control of Libya. And the CIA came in there a long time ago. This was in... He'd been in power just a few years, and they started approaching him to try to tell him, well, he needed to be able to defend his country, et cetera. So they made a deal with Libya that the CIA would provide Libya with yellow cake, and thereby Gaddafi could do a nuclear enrichment program and build power plants with it, but also have a nuclear arsenal.
This was during the embargo, which was brought on by Lockerbie.
And we know that for a fact because the guy that was the head of their Atomic Energy Commission was a guy named Dr. Nori Dorogi. He was educated in the United States and got his doctorate in England. And the CIA would pick him up in Tripoli, fly him into Florida, load him up with yellow cake, and fly it back to Tripoli.
He told us personally.
So that was that nuclear enrichment program was initiated, and all the equipment was provided by U.S. providers
during the embargo.
Now let's move forward. 2006, the treaty that was signed, Gaddafi had to step down out of power. He had to completely eliminate his nuclear enrichment program. He had to reduce his military by 50%. He had to get rid of all of his offensive weapons. He did all those things. Yet Gaddafi in 2011 was the guy still running the government. He wasn't. He'd been out of the lead position since 2006.
They had a prime minister and two houses, a representative house and the general secretary to the tribes.
Now, the trouble in Libya is about 150 years ago, the Khazarian mafia out of Turkey moved into the Misrata area of Tripoli.
Uh-huh.
And they are bad guys. They have been. That's the same tribe that Jesus threw out of the temple, the money traders.
Right.
They went to Misrata, acted like they were Jews. I mean, pardon me, acted like they were Muslims, but they're not. They're really a religious-less Satan bunch, you know. They were the problem in Libya. They were the ones that were the mafia. They were causing all the internal problems in the country. And the Libyans are the most non-confrontational people in the world. They won't fight about anything. They will not. And in the tribal culture, you settle things amicably, period. That's it. They would fight. They would threaten. They would harass. So the Misrata Mafia got 60% of all the government contracts without bid or tender. And then they would turn around and sub those out to foreign builders. And, of course, the foreign builders came in paying a big fee for the already issued contract. And then the Misrata Mafia would screw them regularly. Any change order, they didn't pay them for that. They short paid them. They slow paid them. And after some time, the foreign company would say, to hell with this, and they'd leave. Then the mafia would turn around and sell to another contractor. And they were the real problem in Libya. And they had done a Bernie Madoff kind of a scheme. And some real sharp IT guys, young men, found it. And the government of Libya was about to go and attack and take all the assets and property from the Misrata Mafia. So guess what? That was the opportune time for Clinton, Obama, and company to join hands with them and go in and invade and destroy Libya. And the proof of that happening, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask you. I was just going to throw in a couple of things. I didn't want to interrupt your train of thought here, but you know, it transpired, ran across my computer here. I don't know, about a year ago, that the regarding the Lockerbie Pan Am 103 bombing, it came to light that the United States actually paid witnesses $4 million each to testify against these four Libyan men. Am I correct on that?
Exactly.
Yes,
100%. That plane was blown up because the CIA involvement in drug trafficking worldwide was about to be outed, and there were three investigators on that plane flying back. It was holiday. The U.S. notified, the CIA notified all the politicians to get off of that plane. That's why there were so many students on standby on that plane. But that was to eliminate that file of all the proof of the CIA involvement in drug trafficking worldwide.
I see. Okay. All right. Well, no, go ahead and continue with your thoughts there, Jim.
Okay. Now then, the destruction of Libya, like I said, the bad guys never stopped trying to do that. So they had war games that they played in early 2010 about the takeover of Libya. They were going to move 11 ships in the Mediterranean. They were going to start with the no-fly zone. Everything that happened, and it was supposed to start on March 15th. It started a month early. But that was outed by Denis Kucinich. He said, here's when the war games were played. War games are set up months, if not years, in advance. So the Arab Spring was a setup deal. That was another false flag operation. And the target was always Libya. Now, the fact that Morsi and company took over Egypt, you have to understand Morsi and his wife were 30-year friends of Bill and Hillary Clinton. Morsi had no credentials at all to run a government. So he was people of Egypt, as you know, stood up and had a rally, and I don't know how many millions of them threw him out. So, you know, Libya was the target. The war games were played early 2010. And then Libya was invaded supposedly to establish a no-fly zone. But what they did is there were not enough Libyans involved in that phony revolution. They liked their lifestyle. They liked their country. So the U.S., UN, NATO, Mossad, MI6, CIA brought in 250,000 mercenaries, well-equipped, trained, and funded. They were paid $2,500. A month to join, $2,500 for each soldier they killed, etc. And they were funneled money and weapons and everything, and they continue, the U.S. CIA continues to funnel those bad guys into Libya to this day.
Well, let me back up just a minute here, because I was going to get to that. I was going to ask you guys both, you know, as it was leading up to this, and over here in this country, when the propaganda was, you know, fast and furious regarding, you know, humanitarian violation, and this guy's a bad guy. Just think, same thing they did to Saddam Hussein. Same thing. It's the protocols. It's their playbook. You guys know that.
Yeah.
But you know, let me go. You know, there was a couple of things I wanted to ask you. Muammar Gaddafi actually, there was a $2 million or $2 billion contract with Bechtel to come in there and do something, and Gaddafi nixed that agreement. And I guess he was dancing with Sarkozy, the French prime minister at the time, regarding $14 billion worth of contracts to come in and do something, and Muammar Gaddafi nixed that and basically said, "Nah, we're not going to do that." Do you know anything about those two events?
Yeah, I do. The French contract was Libya has a huge iron ore deposit in the Green Mountain area. That's the area south of Benghazi. That's the only really green area besides the coast in Libya.
Okay.
And the French had gone in there and done all their core testing and everything. They said there was 35% iron in the ore, which is below commercial. 45% is commercial, but the French lied. It's actually 55 to 60%. But they went there and did all these core testing. They were going to do a railroad. They were going to take this ore, even though it wasn't worth anything. They were going to pay a little bit for it, etc. And then the compensation would be that French oil producers, Total and some of the other ones, got to increase their footprint, if you would, in the oil and gas industry in Libya. And, of course, the iron ore would have been a huge benefit to Libya, because the only container port in Libya was Misrata, and it could only handle a 100,000-ton vessel, which is smaller. Today, they're all 120,000, 150,000-ton. The other ports are only good for about 12,500. So any heavy shipments had to be transshipped to get into Libya. So if rebar cost you, let's say, $45 a ton, it might cost you another $45 a ton to ship it in there. And Misrata maintained that small port as the only container port because they wanted to control ingress and egress of all goods and services in and out of Libya. And so you can see how the bad guys are on one side, all of them trying to exploit Libya for their own purposes. And of course, Gaddafi was trying to get along with everybody. So he gave $50 million to Sarkozy for his presidential election, because he said it's better to know your enemy than the enemy you don't know. So he knew Sarkozy well. He also gave 50.
Illegal.
He also gave $50 million to Barack Obama.
It was illegal in France. Let's put it that way. It wasn't illegal for Gaddafi.
Really? He gave $50 million for Barack Obama's campaign?
Absolutely. Yes. And years before Obama was running for president, the Libyans go, oh, we're so happy finally going to have a Muslim president of the United States.
We said, who's that?
And who's that? They said, Barack Obama. He's going to be the next president. I said, well, first of all, he claims to be a Christian. They said, oh, no, he's Muslim Brotherhood.
They weren't happy about him being Muslim Brotherhood. They hate Muslims, but they said he was a Muslim. Years later, they told us that they found out he was Muslim Brotherhood.
Exactly right.
Years later. That was when he attacked Libya.
Gaddafi also gave $10 million to Obama's uncle to try to become president in Kenya.
By the request of Obama.
That is absolutely mind-blowing, guys. I didn't know that. For that to happen... And then for Barack, what does that say about the character of Barack Obama? For this man to donate $50 million to his campaign and then have Barack Obama come out and say, well, we're going to lead from behind. Now, I've heard rumor that actually in this NATO invasion, which I want to get at, I want to get into the mood. I want to get on, you know, you guys were over there at the time, and I want to get into the social mood of the people when all of this propaganda was coming out here and domestically about how he was violating humanitarian rights and he's a bad guy and he's a dictator and he's got to go and so forth. Okay. But Barack Obama had come out and made a statement that he was going to lead from behind. So it was the NATO countries and France that went in there and actually invaded with these mercenaries. And Barack Obama is kind of standing in the background here, you know, giving directions from what I understand. And I've also heard rumor that American pilots were actually flying some of the French jets in there.
We were told that all flights into Libya were American pilots. We know the Canadian planes that were used in Libya, those were U.S. pilots. The French planes, U.S. pilots, etc. So the U.S. was absolutely, you know, undermining the whole – I mean, not undermining. They were leading the whole operation.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about the mood leading up to pre-invasion. You know, what was going on in Libya with the people? Did they know something was coming? Were they, you know
– Yeah, I was there from January 1st, 2011, and I left the 8th of February. And during that period of time, of course, the problems in Tunisia had started, problems in Egypt had started, and there was an influx of the Libyan. I'll describe exactly. There's some real hard men flowing into Libya. The borders were open for any Arab or Muslim to flow into Libya. There's some real hard guys coming in here, and they're not normal people.
That's what they told you.
This is what they told me. They said, you know, these guys, if a piece of machinery is broken, they can fix it. If a gun doesn't work, they can fix it. They're not normal people. And I said, what are you doing about that? And they said, well, we're doubling the salary of all the employees of the government, you know, so that they don't get swayed by the promise of a lot of money and everything, you know. But, you know, the Libyan people, they know who we are. They know what we're doing, you know, and we're not too worried about it. Well, they should have been worried about it.
The Libyans tried to stave this off. In the way they knew how, by the tribal way, which doesn't work internationally. But they, when we were there, we went on a fact-finding commission, and the first week we were there, we were taken to a prison inside Libya where there were probably 250 prisoners there that were captured. These guys were some of the invaders that invaded the country, and the Libyan tribes were releasing them. And they were saying, you are our brothers, you've been brainwashed, we know it. We don't want to kill you. We don't want you to kill us. Please go home and be with your family. And while we were watching this event happen, we were at the prison watching in kind of an auditorium. And we have it on video. And they said, who's from Egypt here? And half the room stood up. Who's from Afghanistan? People stood up. Who's from Yemen? People stood up. Who's from Libya? About 15 people stood up. See, this is the Libyan people. There was no revolution in Libya. It was all a false flag. It was all a lie.
Let me bring something else up. I need two points to bring forward. The Treaty of 2006 required Libya to put all of its Social Security Fund money into the Federal Reserve System and into Euroclear. And in 2011, Libya had $241 billion in cash or cash equivalents in the Federal Reserve. It had 150 billion euros in the European Central Bank system.
Uh-huh.
That money disappeared. This is the first time in history where the rebels were recognized the first week of a revolution as legitimate owners of all the Libyan assets and the Federal Reserve, the Zionist bankers, turned over title to all the Libyan money and assets to those guys. Libya had 179 tons of gold, 2,000 tons of silver, all kinds of rare earths and heavy earths. All that disappeared.
Yeah, but the rebels didn't get the money.
No, the bankers stole got the money.
No, no, and you know what? We got a break coming up here shortly, and I'm going to touch on that when we get back from the break, because I have heard rumor, and I cannot confirm or deny this, but I've heard that Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton had a hand in that. Now, I don't know how true that is, but I do know, you know, it's mysterious that, yes, indeed, he had all this gold, all this money there, and it all disappeared. We'll be back in three with my special guest, Jim and Joanne Moriarty, folks. We'll be right back. I'll open up the phone lines at the top of the hour. I want you to stay on with your questions if you call in, though. Be right back.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Did you know that neither the American Medical Association nor the American Bar Association were established to benefit the American people? Have you recognized that in our country, health care has little to do with health, and that our court system has nothing to do with justice? The priests of both medicine and law have been incentivized to implement a dark agenda on behalf of the Bilderbergers and their ilk. To protect ourselves and our progeny, we need to take a much closer look at how these two giant industries really work. Join me, Al Whitney, on In Defense of Humanity, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Central, as we expose the matrix and learn how not to consent to our own destruction. Did you know that neither the American Medical Association nor the American Bar Association were established to benefit the American people? Have you recognized that in our country, health care has little to do with health, and that our court system has nothing to do with justice? The priests of both medicine and law have been incentivized to implement a dark agenda on behalf of the Bilderbergers and their ilk. To protect ourselves and our progeny, we need to take a much closer look at how these two giant industries really work. Join me, Al Whitney, on In Defense of Humanity, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Central, as we expose the matrix and learn how not to consent to our own destruction.
American Awakening, and my special guest Jim and Joanne Moriarty. Now, a short segment coming up before the top of the hour, and as I said, I will open the phone lines, but please do not call in unless you stay on point and you have a question for these people. They were on the ground in Libya during the time of the NATO invasion, and Jim, we were touching on this, all this money, $241 billion of dollars, $150 billion in euros or pounds, 177, 179 tons of gold that all disappeared mysteriously. Who got I mean, ultimately, the money went to the banksters, as are you saying?
Because they control it. All dollars and all euros are owned by the banks. You're allowed to use it as long as you use it the way that they approve. Otherwise, it's in their banks. It's in their accounts that they allow you to use. So they just snatch it up at will. But I want your audience to know before some of them may leave the hour, you know, Joanne and I were captured by Al-Qaeda. We were trapped in Tripoli for over 100 days. And when Tripoli was invaded, Joanne and I were captured by Al-Qaeda. We were taken to their torture center. We were to be killed and chopped up and burned.
Got out of
three miracles. Absolutely no help from this government at all. And since we've gotten back here, we have been attacked by U.S. intelligence agencies. Four of them have threatened to kill us. We didn't shut up talking about what we know and saw in Libya. We are the official spokespersons for the tribes of Libya because we were there with them during this terrible invasion and the blow up of their country.
The Russian ambassador stepped forward and helped us.
Yeah, but you know we're official. So the information we get is not just originated by us; it comes from the tribes, and incidentally, it's been validated as being 100% by Congressman Pete Sessions from Dallas. Now he's not a good guy at all, but he was forced by Regina Ambergia from Dallas to talk to us. And we cornered him at an event one time, and he talked to us, and he found out that we were valid. He spent an hour and a half writing down all our information and then called General Flynn, who at the time was the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, into Pete's office in D.C., and he said, "I want to know about these people." And Pete called us back 10 days later, as he promised. He said, "I want you to know that General Flynn confirmed that everything you said is absolutely correct. You have been blacklisted, soft killed, your business ruined, you've been targeted," and that General Flynn also said, "But the unusual thing, these two people have been sitting there home in the Woodlands, Texas, pick up their phone and receive actionable intelligence from anywhere in North Africa." He said, "We don't know how these people got inside the tribes. No intelligence agency anywhere in the world has ever been able to do that." And Pete says, "Well, why didn't you make these two people your best friend instead of attacking them?" And of course, Flynn had no answer to that.
The
information we have has been validated by the top intelligence agencies in the United States as being 100% accurate. And it comes not from anything we originated, but from the tribes.
The reason we're targeted is because we're eyewitnesses to the war crimes they committed over there. And they committed huge war crimes.
Mass graves. We saw three of them of 128. These were full of bodies. They were about 50 foot long, 20 foot wide. I don't know how deep, full of mostly black bodies. We saw three of those. We saw the fuel air explosive bombs used. We saw the fragmentation bombs
used. They did over 60,000 sorties on Libya after the no-fly zone. Man-made river they bombed.
More bombs dropped than World War II combined.
They bombed schools. They bombed hospitals. They bombed water supplies.
Oh, my God. All right. We got to take a top-of-the-hour break. We'll be back in 2 minutes, folks. We'll continue with this. I'm speechless. You guys were there and witnessed this. Amazing. We'll be right back, folks.
And I'll keep paying. I'm not ready to make nice. I'm not ready to back down. I'm still mad as hell, and I don't have time to go round and round and round. It's too late to make it right. I probably wouldn't.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.